Just a bit of background. That was from the... I couldn't bring the chicken because that's from the Animation Festival. So it was actually our prize-winning day for the school children for the competition yesterday. And so we had the Raspberry Pi and the chicken there. So what that was a demo of is we got this animatronic chicken. We just cut a couple of wires. Then we just screwed it into two terminals. We've got a nice... Python API, which talks to Twitter. There's a text-to-speech engine running on the Pi as well, and we can give that to children, and we can say, right, edit six lines of code, and you can either make it follow a person, you can make it follow a particular tag, or they can, obviously, then the children can take it as far as they like. So that's just one of an example of what you can do with the interface we've got. So... another example we've got is a few games. If I just to take it into schools. And so what that's showing, that's just one example. We've got about five buttons or so, all with LEDs in. So you can drive the LEDs from the outputs, sense the inputs with the switches. And that's running whack-a-mole. So basically the light lights up, you have to press the button. So we can get the children to write that, depending on where we go in. But they can put that together in just a few minutes, and they can get a fun game. The teacher in the background there says, I don't think I've ever seen you concentrate as much, so, Bradley. So that basically just shows how we discovered it really engages them. It's they see the game, they want to play the game, and then that leads them to want to learn more. You can't say, we're going to teach you computer science. What we can say is, that's something fun. If you want to do more, then you'll have to learn. And, well, you have to say that, but they sort of gather that. So then, there's another game, just as another example. We've got a scalextric set here. And we've sort of basically just got a just set of resources to right way around. And basically it shows you how to... There's a jack connector on the game, so you could just, simple thing to just, it doesn't quite cut the wire, but effectively you cut the wire of the game, and then the Raspberry Pi can control the scalextric. And so then on screen, I can't see if I pointed that. There's a pointer there. So you can just about see that in that window. You get questions popping up, multiple choice. If you press the right button, then you get the relay turns on, powers your car a bit further, and the children can race it round. And again, our experience is that it really just captures their interest. Once you've got their interest, you can get them to do more. Why am I here? I'm trying to make PowerPoint work. Right. So just going back. So basically we've got Manchester StemNet involved. Presumably you've got StemNet in Cambridge and other places around the country. But it's a group which gets engineers and StemNet ambassadors. I've seen a few actually with the triangular badges on. And so we're providing this as an activity for them, and then they can... come in, talk to us, we'll help them develop activities, and then they can take it into schools. So we're also running teachers' workshops. It's all Manchester-based, but we might have another one in Cambridge, or talk to someone here to get it organised. But basically, what we've got a set of outline sort of activity sheets which take you through lesson plans and that. And we'd like to develop more, and we'd like to do that with teachers. So, how do you get in touch? Well, we've got, if I just show you the website. We're on. So, website is pi.cs.man.ac.uk. Another thing which might be worthwhile though, having a quick look at, we're running a competition which we're calling the Great British Raspberry Pi Bake Off, and that's a chance for, we're running two strands, one for hobbyists to get together, have a come up with a brief project presentation, send it in, and also one for school people, although we might actually speak to foundation because we don't want to shut down. Because I know they just launched a competition. But basically, any questions, I'm andrew@cs.mandatact.uk. I'll just contact details on here. If you can't remember all that, if you just search Raspberry Pi and interface, then you'll get to one of our pages. That's it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Recording audio, just as I look around the room, I can see iPhones and cameras and all sorts of other devices recording things. One way we can share that is we use the Raspberry Jam on Twitter with a hash. That's a good way of sharing. So when somebody mentions an email address or a website, it would be great if you put that in there and that people can find that. We're also, at the moment, we're doing a live stream. So we're using a product called Google Hangout, which is on air. So people could be on YouTube right now watching this. And afterwards, some kind people like Leon, who's doing a sterling job here at the front, will then release this on YouTube so you can watch the videos afterwards, even if you missed it. Leon Sish, he tends to tweet things using the handle @ibeams, E-Y-E, not the letter I. And he has a YouTube channel which is CPD for Change. So you go afterwards to youtube.com/CPD4Change. But that'll all be tweeted afterwards. And I'm also asking people like Andrew and our next speakers, if you've got any slides that you've used today, please tweet a location to that so we can all capture it and share it. And I'm really hoping some people have agreed today to write some blog posts to put things on there. So this is all about sharing or spreading, if you let me get away with that pun again. So I mentioned we had lots of exciting speakers today. Our next speakers that are lined up, we've got Alistair from London Zoo, and we have Gary as well. And they're doing a fantastic project with the Raspberry Pi. So let's have it for them. Here's for them.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here today. I'm sure you're thinking, what are London Zoo doing at an event like this? Well, hopefully that's what we're going to explain to you today. We had to have a nice pun to our presentation, so we went for iSpy, did a little play on the logo there. But we're looking at conservation, education, and of course the Raspberry Pi, how we can fuse those together and work with children to actually get involved in conservation. So, what's ZSL's mission? Well, we promote and achieve the worldwide conservation of animals and their habitats. Doesn't sound like an electronics kind of situation, but it can be. Recently, we produced something called Instant Wild. Now, Instant Wild's an app. So it's an app that runs on a smartphone, and it's a citizen science project. And what this app does is it shows you photographs taken by remote cameras that we place around the world, our conservation projects, and it beams them to your phone. And you look at these photos, you identify what's been taken in it, you identify the animal, and you let us know. And we've run this for about 8 months now, and it's been incredibly popular. It runs like this on the app. You can subscribe to different cameras. You can subscribe to cameras in Kenya, in Sri Lanka, or even in the UK. And these are the photos we get. These are beamed live from our cameras. Cellular, so they're sent as 45K photographs on GPRS connections. Nice elephant shot. Also infrared, so we can get night shots of rhinos and, very interesting, leopards at the moment. And this little chap here, this was shot in Sri Lanka. He hasn't been seen for 3 years in the wild. This photo came in last year, but this was a remarkable find because we were actually finding species in the wild and we were actually getting people, citizens in the UK, identifying them for us. So this is what we're tasked with. This is the camera we have now. They're off-the-shelf cameras, as I said, GSM antennas, LED flashes and PIR sensors. This is what happens when hyenas and elephants destroy them. So there, that's a nice hyena chomp mark from the battery case. On the left, the elephant, somehow the elephant stood on the camera and only managed to destroy the plastic around the antenna. The camera survived. This is what happens when our hyena chews through the screen, and we had to invent a little icon there for camera down, our hyena has destroyed it. So, the last photo here taken by a camera shows our hyena that's destroyed the particular camera, and we're looking at what's next for our project. Well, we have these issues with wildlife, they destroy our cameras, but we also have this fantastic opportunity to use the Raspberry Pi. We want to take the cameras we use, off-the-shelf cameras, and forget about that. We want to use the Raspberry Pi as our base. We want to have children build the cameras at home, in a parents-based situation where they can put the camera in their garden and use it for a UK-wide sensor to spot wildlife. We want to get the children working with us at the zoo. We have 1.1 million people walk through the zoo every year. We had a drop-in workshop where they can come and get involved in building Raspberry Pi-based cameras, and I'm looking at this camera module that we're looking at, Raspberry Pi looking at releasing soon. It's very interesting for this project. We're looking at how we can use a Raspberry Pi to achieve our goal. And we've been doing this software-based. This is working with Mozilla Foundation. We're working with kids here on HTML and CSS projects, actually to get them to build animals in a kind of mashup scenario. So you have a few heads of a particular animal, legs, arms, feet, and you rebuild it and describe why your animal's endangered and how it lives within the wild. But the big situation here is a technology challenge. And so I'm going to introduce my colleague, Gary. He's going to talk to you more about the technology challenge of this project.
GSM cameras, and there's a few problems with that. So we've got a new technology challenge that we're looking at the zoo. So we want to create a mesh camera network that we can penetrate into the depths of nature reserves so that we can have cameras about 2 kilometers apart with a basic satellite phone in the middle of that mesh network that will distribute those images across. So that's our remit for the project. But we have to do that within a budget of £70 to £80 for each device, which obviously is a pretty tall order until Raspberry Pi came along. So the other thing that we want to do with this project is make sure that everybody has access to these devices, and it's all part of an open source project that we can share with other zoos, people at home, and some other projects that we're currently getting involved in with the BBC. So our initial concept was we were going to use the Arduino, the XB radio, we were going to use the Adafruit TTL camera and a motion sensor. And this comes in about the right price. But unfortunately, then they teased us with Raspberry Pi, and we thought we could do an awful lot more. So that's just a bit of a preview of or a network diagram of basically how we originally wanted it to look with the Arduino devices feeding back to the Raspberry Pi and then to the satellite phone. So the Raspberry Pi would be responsible for sending those images to a remote server that can be accessed from the iPhone application. So now we've got a really cheap device that we can use. We've got a whole host of options that are now available to us. So we can easily access to these satellite phones, which was a little bit difficult with the previous technology we were looking at. And we can do some pretty good things like zip files up and make sure that we're using low satellite amounts of bandwidth. But we can do a lot more than that. We can perform image analysis, we can use environmental sensors, we can, for example, we can get the temperature, the humidity, and various other environmental conditions when we actually take the camera, when we actually take the picture. We can also take time-lapse images as well, and that's really good for conservation efforts because we can see how areas are changing over a period of time. We can also start looking at doing some extra clever stuff, like we can do some sound analysis. For example, if there were gunshots going off in the wild, we could then relay that information back to the authorities. We can also monitor radio tags of animals that we're monitoring within the area as well. Then there's a new project that we're also looking at over the next couple of weeks called Predator. And this is an object analysis piece of software. And as you can see here, basically at the moment they're flying these drones.
able to recognise animals because the software has actually learnt the shape of the animal.
So this actually will allow us to track animals, for example, going in and out of water holes. And we can keep an eye on migration of certain animals as well, which is really good from a conservation point of view. Okay, so there's a couple of other things we can do with the Raspberry Pi as well, which we're looking at. And this is a marine application where we can measure, we can review how the coral reefs are responding to environmental conditions. And there's a couple of things that we're looking at there, and there's some sensors that we're currently working with for pH, colour temperature and this sort of thing. So why are we here today? We're here to show off the plan that we want to use Pi for. We're here to network. Mentioned that this is an open source project. We don't want to work alone. We really want to collaborate with some of you guys in the room. So basically when we're finished up here, if you want to have a chat with Alistair or I afterwards, we'd love to get you involved. If you've got an area of technical expertise that you think may be useful for the project, we'd love to hear from you. The other reason we're here is because we'd really like the Raspberry Pi team to give us a tech preview of their camera. And yeah, as I said, we'd love to hear from you. So we've got a blog at the moment on this web address. So if you want to collaborate after the event, you'll find a few more details here. So thank you very much.
And also because of my work on Raspberry Pi tutorials and how big that channel got, I also work for Linux User and Developer magazine as a technical author and written Raspberry Pi tutorial articles. So Raspberry Pi tutorials, I created the YouTube channel on the 31st of October 2011, and this morning I checked and I've got roughly 10,000 subscribers and almost a million video views to date, which is something I think is quite impressive and sort of shows how big the project is. So,
I'm just going to quickly go through the tutorials I've done, and I've sort of split them up into five playlists. So the first couple of tutorials I did, which was back in October, just to sort of see
how they go was like setting up a virtual environment which would emulate what would be on the Raspberry Pi. And more recently, I've upgraded these tutorials so it says at the start, if you have actually got a Raspberry Pi, then you don't need to start here. So I got quite a lot of views on this, and then after I got quite a lot of interest off these two tutorials, I moved on to a couple of like introduction Python tutorials, so like Hello World, stuff like that, introducing the environment that we'd be using and a little bit about the language and how it worked. Then after that, I thought, well, what's going to get people interested more than doing games? So I started using something called Pygame, which is a really easy to use way of making like little 2D games. So the first game I made was called Pie Shooter, and we did that across about 4 tutorials, and I suppose each one got more difficult as it got along. And it looks like this. It's sort of like an arcade style shooter, so the little Raspberry Pi logo would move across, and then you'd click the move the crosshairs with the mouse and click on it, and that would make your score go up. And then the next game I did was something a bit more advanced, and that's a snake game called Pi Snake, and there's more tutorials there. I think there was about 8 tutorials that made up that game, but obviously I can't fit them all on the screen, and that looked a little something like that. So the little Raspberry Pi logo would generate anywhere on the screen, and then the green square would be a snake, and as you like run into the thing more times, it'd get longer and your score would go higher. And then more recently, the tutorials I've been doing, which I suppose are the most useful really in terms of like for beginners, is getting your Raspberry Pi going. So you've just got your Raspberry Pi and you've got an SD card and you need to get it ready. And I did a version of that a while ago, but I've recently I had to take a break off Raspberry Pi tutorials because I have my exams and stuff like that. it was only a few days ago, probably about 2 days ago, and already that's got almost 2,000 views, because I did a tutorial on preparing the SD card, but it was a bit confusing and people were complaining in the comments. So I've redone it, and as you can see there, it only takes about 5 minutes to do once you've downloaded the thing. So coming soon, I've managed to get hold of a Mac, and I'm going to do the same tutorial for a Mac. So, because I've had a lot of comments saying, you know, I've got a Mac, how to do this on a Mac. So there's going to be tutorials on getting a Raspberry Pi going or setting the SD card up on a Mac. And that's really all I've got to say. Just check out Raspberry Pi tutorials. If you type it in on YouTube, it's quite easy to find. And if you've got any suggestions for tutorials, feel free to come and speak to me in the day. All right, thanks a lot.
Computing taking over the world, not just for men, but all you women and girls. We're not just looking for geeks and nerds, going to make more famous than the Angry Birds. Why are you shaking your head? So, you know how I started? I said to you, we've got 4 groups of people here. We've got those who have and have, those who have and haven't, those who haven't and have. And then there was a few people that kind of put their hand up like this and said they haven't got a Raspberry Pi and they don't know what to do with it. Well, I went and I found some. And when you have your Raspberry Jam in your local town or whatever it is, just find some people and say, would you mind just talking to us? And Dawn and Sally, when I went and spoke to them, I said, have you got Raspberry Pis? They said, no. Do we need them to be here? No, you're welcome. Do you know what to do with them? No, we don't. I said, well, I really want you to come and talk for a few minutes. And they haven't prepared anything. Dawn is... they have prepared lots of things, just not for today. Dawn Hewitson is a teacher educator at Edgehill College University thingy in
Edgehill University, Norfolk.
Okay, that's what it is. And Sally is a primary ICT subject advisor in another part of the country.
Yeah.
Oh, this part of the country.
Oh.
And I said, would you mind just telling us like what your hopes and aspirations would be about how you think the Raspberry Pi can fit into education? So they're very brave. Let's show it to them.
Children, but also the children that are taught by my students to be involved in this. I think it's a really, really good piece of hardware. I've got one at home, and I'm ashamed to say I've not taken it out of the box yet because I've been so busy with dealing with students and different bits and pieces. But I am really, really keen to get involved in this. I'm not sure if there is anybody here from any of the Cambridgeshire schools, primary schools I work with. I have got a secondary school colleague. Oh, well, there we go then. I've got one on order. I'm not sure where this fits in with primary school technology education, apart from the fact that I know that some of our very youngest children are doing Logo right from the start with programmable toys on the floor, moving on to on-screen stuff. We have got some exciting project work going on with primary schools, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11-year-olds with Scratch already. So I was just coming along to see really what we might be doing with our primary schools in order to prepare them for the Raspberry Pi. But I suppose I'm thinking now, well, we maybe ought to be doing something to do with the Raspberry Pi in our primary schools, and I can see some nods there. So enough said, that's what I'm going to do then, try and get this going with teachers in primary schools in Cambridgeshire. And I've just spotted somebody over there that I know. So we might be talking later.
Yes.
Okay, thank you, that's all
thank
I'm going to say.
And I also say thank you.
Sent out the email to everybody, so those of you from Cambridgeshire, it is appreciated, and thank you very much for coming. Graham is definitely your man you need to talk to.
So in a moment we're going to have Russell Dunlop. So Russell, if you could get ready to come out in a moment while I just share some more information with you. Russell, say hi, I'm Alan, I'm getting ready.
Russell
Dunlop. Oh,
yeah.
Are you not Russell Dunlop?
No, it's Keith
Dunlop. Oh, no.
He does this to me every time.
Russell couldn't be with us today, so.
I bought my alternative personality, don't worry, it's much nicer.
Hang on, it's my chance to entertain the audience.
Oh, sorry.
It's not your turn yet. Getting you mic'd up. So. So if you're thinking of having a Raspberry Jam yourself, and I really would encourage you to do that, or at least start planning it, some of the things that will occur to you, you'll start to see barriers. And I've had this from, you know, somebody in Denmark this week said, I really, really want to have a Raspberry Pi in Denmark, a Raspberry Jam in Denmark, but I haven't got a Raspberry Pi yet. I said, perfect, that's a great way to get people, because you want the people who have to come and meet you and show what you can do. Lots of people see barriers. There aren't any barriers, really. You just need a space and to bring people together. And whether your name is Liam, or Liam, or Louise, or Laura, or whatever your name is, it doesn't matter what age you are, you can actually set one of these things up yourself. In fact, I'd like to mention Robert, and I think he's watching this, in Machynlleth, I've been practicing that, in West Wales, 15-year-old, with his chums, said, can we have one? What age do you have to be to organise a Raspberry Jam? You can be any age, but I wouldn't mind talking to your teacher or a parent just to make sure you don't have 300 people turning up at your school and it's just a bunch of and there's a bunch of 15-year-olds going, oh, nice. Now, I don't want to make your head a little bit bigger than it might be already, but when you came in before, Eben said, I really want to meet these Riskos people. And Russell and Keith,
all 10 of us,
are the Riskos guys, and they've got some really exciting stuff. So we are recording this, and Eben can watch this later on.
What I'm about to demonstrate is an alternative operating system that very, very recently has been made able to run on the Raspberry Pi. It's an operating system, and I am going to have to walk away from this microphone because I've got to reach that bit of electronics. Oh, that's the other thing. We are actually doing this demonstration from a Raspberry Pi. If it works. I've now got to feel my audience. Right, it's hands in the air time again. I'm sorry, I know Alan's done it to you. He's a teacher, I'm not, so I'm allowed to do it. First question. Ever heard of a computing company called Acorn? Stick your hands in the air. Yep. Keep your hands in the air if you've heard of its operating system called RiskOS. Yes, that's what I'm demonstrating. As I'm sure you're all aware, Acorn were the company that made the first ARM processor. And as you all know, the core of a Raspberry Pi is a Broadcom system on a chip which has got an ARM core on it. This operating system, this lovely operating system that I'm not biased about whatsoever, was designed all the way back in 1987 to run on ARM architecture. Makes it very unusual. It's one of the very, very few operating systems that's actually designed for the ARM, not ported from some other monstrosity. So I think the first thing to do is to talk about how it works. You might recognize that gray bar along the bottom. You've probably seen it on every other operating system that's copied it. Including this bloke called, oh, William Gates has got something to do with this building. We call it the icon bar. Basically what you've got on it, it says trying to find his mouse, here it is. You have, where's my mouse gone? I shall concentrate on this screen. Drives along here, and then over here you've got some running programs. That is a browser, which I will wait for it to load. There's probably something that you've just noticed straight away about the Windows. Hang on a minute, there's no text in there. That's because RiskOS is a very, not unusual, it has the correct way of using a mouse. It's got you've got three fingers when you're holding a mouse, which means if you want to, if I just open up the hard drive, here it is, double click, that's normal, open a folder, come on, open up. Doing too well. Oh, well, never mind. That's better. Normal. If I want to do something, I then use my middle finger when this mouse starts working. That's why you've got no text at the top of the window. Wherever you are, if you want to do something, you just use that finger. These days, it's normally a scroll wheel. Yeah, they work as well. But the interesting thing is the other button. Shall I just get rid of this? My mouse will actually start working, which it was before, but not working now, which is typical when you're trying to do a demonstration. Nice. Oh, well, I think I've broken it. Tell you what. Oh, yeah, that's the reset switch. While I waited for it to boot up again, I need to explain one very important thing about RiskOS. Is that the operating system itself, as you can see as it's loading up on the screen, it used to sit in ROMs, actually in chips. These days, of course, it's actually a file on the SD card on your Raspberry Pi. It's huge, it's really, really bloated, it's all of 6 meg. In fact, it's only recently gone to 6 meg. Before that, it was down to around about 4, and there were enormous complaints about the fact that, oh my God, it's 6 meg! How's that going to fit into anything? Well, this SD card that I've got in this Raspberry Pi is 4 gigs, so I think I've got enough room in there somewhere. Okay, 2 minutes. Oh dear. I'm going to have to reboot it again as well. It's not working properly. I was waiting long enough, but never mind. It's because it's trying to get a network connection. And we're pretending to be an employee of Cambridge University at the minute. We're sharing MAC addresses with somebody else. That's because I'm sure you're all aware of the fact that the chip that's used on the Raspberry Pi to translate the USB into Ethernet, it doesn't come with a hard-coded MAC address. You know, most operating systems sort of generate the MAC address from the serial number of the CPU. I might have to. I'm going to try escape on this. There we go. All right. I don't want to do networking anyway. We've done it already. The website I pulled up there is where you actually get risk requests from these days. It's a place called riskquestopen.org. Because yes, it is actually open sourced. It's got an interesting license. It's not quite the normal sort of Linux thing of, you know, everything's GPL and all that stuff. It's based on a NetBSD license. It's a thing called a shared source license. Basically, you can download the source code. You can do what you like with it. If you're a user like me, that's all I am. I'm a user. I'm not a programmer or anything like that. You can tell. I can't even use my own computer. Then you don't have to pay for it. But if you want to make a commercial product, then there is a license fee to pay. But it's not that much money in real terms. Right, now hopefully my desktop's going to work properly and I can demonstrate the use of adjust. That will do. Right, I'm going to do the down arrow, and then if I use the other mouse button, the third one, you can see it goes up. The idea behind adjust is that it allows you to do something slightly different. So for instance, I want to select more than one folder, there I'm going to that one, so this isn't going to work now, and then I can... That's just using the mouse. Look, that hand was beeping at my little teapot. No use of the keyboard there. And it's... I mean, the thing about RISC-V is obviously that when Acorn designed it, you know, they really, really thought about it. And the other thing is that you don't really see... When you see videos of people doing things with Raspberry Pis, they don't really do this very much when they're running Linux, do they? It's not slow. Yes, any of those who are familiar with RISC-OS and have seen these demonstrations before, I'll probably ask you what was the last generation of machine you used. There it is at its maximum. That's a vector. Because the other thing, of course, that RISC-OS actually has built into it is programs. Yes, in 6 meg, you've got a text editor, a vector drawing package. You may think, why vector drawing? Well, you saw that. There's also something else that comes with RISC-OS, and this is it. Right, the 5 magic letters. Ta-da. You saw it as we started. You saw BBC-B doing that. BBC Basic is built into RISC-OS. Now, Dave Braben did an interview with the BBC towards the tail end of last year, talking about the coming of the Raspberry Pi and everything else. And one of the things he did mention in the interview was, well, yeah, BASIC. It's a really good language to teach people how to program. And then, yeah, we might have a problem getting that in the Pi. Not anymore. End of line. And that's it. Round of Queensbury rules in about an hour.
Just give me enough time to get back to Preston. Now, when you're organising a Raspberry... I've seen that lady before somewhere. When you're organising your local Raspberry Jam, be it on your kitchen table, in a cupboard somewhere, in a classroom, in a massive theatre like this. Just be sensitive to the fact that not everybody is happy speaking in front of a microphone. Look at me, for example. You can tell I'm not used to doing this kind of thing. But you'll also find there are people who want to come along and demonstrate things and that you can get your hands on and do stuff. And there's somebody over there who's going to give us a wave in a moment. Leo White, just give us a wave. I was distracted before. Sorry, Keith. Leo's got a big track. And he's got a big track with a Raspberry Pi on it. And I didn't actually plan for Leo to give a talk today, but I bet Leo would love to talk to you about that. And he's given me his email address as well, which is... He's got a PlayStation controller. Oh, my goodness. And it works!
Have the rocket launcher out for Christmas.
So Leo, have you created, this is a portable Wi-Fi station, a broadcast Wi-Fi.
If you plug in the Wi-Fi thing, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Wow. Give a round of applause.
Hoover electronic control modules back in the 90s, every single one was tested by a piece of test equipment running BBC Basic. That's where we're based. To the youngsters here, look, this is what's happening to us. We're getting old. We need new youngsters coming through doing this type of design work. It's fun, you get paid for it, and you can work in places like this. Unfortunately, if you look around, an awful lot of us are getting into our 40s and 50s and we can't see the follow-through coming through. This is what Raspberry Pi is important. The reason Raspberry Pi is so important, we need to inspire the youngsters to go down this career route to explore what is a fascinating area of design possibilities. We are 28 employees. We were established in 1984. And we have sold 50,000 X10i units. And X10i is what I'm going to tell you about. Andrew talks about Pi-Face. X10i is a product that's been around for a long time. It wasn't designed for the Raspberry Pi, but adds some quite interesting features onto Raspberry Pi, and I'm going to run through those briefly now. Why might you need it? It's a USB peripheral that will plug into the USB port on the Raspberry Pi. It runs a true USB 2 interface. It's not a serial emulator. We've got a good throughput rate. The Raspberry Pi doesn't have a battery mount clock, and the OS expects you to put the date time in. It becomes very easy to plug in an XTi into it. It's running, it's got the battery mount clock in there. It will give you that additional capability. The Raspberry Pi has an audio output, but it doesn't have a power amplifier built into it. If you run the jack socket from the Raspberry Pi through to the jack socket on the X10i, feeding 12 volts, you've got a stereophile 1 amplifier available to you. Suddenly you can produce the sounds that you want to produce. We've got an RS-232 port, RS-232 levels, as well as TTL levels, two ports in fact. Again, the Raspberry Pi, I believe, has a UART built in, but I was looking at the hardware schematics last night. I don't think they're brought out to the port, but perhaps someone can correct me on that. We've also got, we've got 32 open drain power outputs. These are switches. You can turn things off and on with them. They're up to about an amp or so. Four of them will do 14 amps, 100 volts. They're overload protected. You're not going to blow anything up if you use these outputs. It's well protected hardware. If your kids wire things up to the wrong voltages, the wrong supplies, they've got a stalled motor, you're probably going to be okay. It's going to give you protection between the Raspberry Pi and the outside world. If you connect to the Raspberry Pi inputs, you put 5 volts into it, you haven't got Raspberry Pi, you've got toast. If you use an X-Tay, then you're introducing, it's not bomb-proof, but you're introducing some protection, so if the children start wanting to do some more adventurous stuff and they suddenly get the wires crossed, it won't be the end of the world. Those two protected inputs, you can put 12 volts in on these inputs. If you want to connect them to a switch, you don't need to put a pull-up resistor in, it's already there. We've got an 8-way DIL switch. You want to configure it, but you can actually connect 8 of these devices to one Raspberry Pi if you really want to. They've got 3 switch positions to give them unique addresses. That's a phenomenal number of outputs. 32 outputs on each one. You can do the sums. That's probably more than you need. 512, half a meg of battery backless RAM. I'm a small embedded engineer. That's a lot to me. Others will laugh. It is battery backed up. Again, if you power down your Raspberry Pi, anything there is there when you power back up again. 32kb EEPROM. If you're worried about the battery going flat, you can write to the EEPROM as well. It's a smaller amount, but that's completely non-volatile. That will always be there until you overwrite it with something new. Something you might not have come across before. There's a little chip. When all the power's off, everything's shut down. 4 inputs are being monitored, logged, and time-stamped with activity. When you power up again, you can read the log, see what's been going on. Electronic serial number if you want to identify unique boards. Customer security options is not likely to be of interest to most people, but in fact, we can customise the chip there so it's tied to your program. Only your program will run with your board. Only that board will only run with your program. It's not going to be of much use to most people here, but if you start moving to areas where you want to start protecting your code from copying and cloning, it could be of use. It's a standard ETX power supply connector. You take any computer power supply, plug it in, and they'll give you the 12 volts and 5 volts. You don't need to put the 12 volts into it. You don't want to use the power amplifier. Most of it will run off 5 volts. If you connect it to a Raspberry Pi, you will have to connect it via a hub. There is not enough current coming out of the Raspberry Pi to power it. And in addition, you will probably want to use a keyboard and a mouse, in which case the 2 USB slots are used up already. So a powered USB hub is probably what you're going to need to use. What software is included? This product's been around for it's been in development for over 10 years. There is an enormous suite of software. The writing to outputs has been simplified. UCall functions are called set OP17 if you want output 17 to turn on. You clear OP17 if you want it to turn off. Perhaps the most important feature of this is that this is running code on a Cypress 8051-based processor independently of the Raspberry Pi. You've got real-time functions here that do not rely on the Raspberry Pi real-time performance. So, for example, any of the 32 outputs can be asked to pulse on a duty cycle, and you can set that running and ask it and keep it going. You don't need to keep revisiting it. There are a lot of functions built into this. I'm not going to try and go through all of them. The manual is pretty thick. We've ported it onto the Squeeze and the Wheezy versions so far. You can get the image from our website. It's pre-installed. It comes with some demo programs as well and a C compiler. We don't have a Python API for it yet, but if the demand was there, I think it's very likely that we would add that. The API has been, as I say, in use for many years. This is a proven product which has been available and in manufacture for a long time. It predates the Raspberry Pi.
but it's a very nice match to the Raspberry Pi capabilities. Some of the things that you might want to do if you want to do robotics, then we've got step motor control built into this. You tell it the ramp tables you want it to use and how far you want it to go. Connect 6 wires from a step motor to this and apply 12 volts and it'll work. The pulsed outputs could be useful for DC motors. If you want to drive DC motor at full speed, you give it 100% use cycle. If you want to go half speed, you give it 50% use cycle. Simple stuff, but it allows kids to get up and running really fast and making things do things, and I think that's what really fires people up. If you want to get one, go to our website, kiva.co.uk. You can buy it with PayPal, and they're available now. Thank you.
VIPs here for you today. So what's going to happen in a moment, I've just asked 6 helpers over there if they're going to go and get some chairs from the cafe. They're going to bring them in to the front. So that'll create a little bit of noise, a bit of distraction. While they're doing that, there's something I'd like you to think about and talk to the people sat around you. Now, the person who's sat on your left or on your right is someone you came with. Maybe just stretch your neck muscles a little bit. Other people who are sat behind you. Or the people who are sat below you. I haven't told you to talk yet. Let me tell you what I'd like you to talk about. So I did mention the aim of today's event is all about trying to establish Raspberry Jams in other places, including Cambridge, so teachers like Graham can get people like you to come into school to support children, encourage their interest, so we'll have more Liams and Laurens and Louises all doing things like this in their schools and background bedrooms and all sorts. So what I'm going to ask you in a moment is, if you were going to organise a Raspberry Jam closer to your home, be it in your local Starbucks, or in your kitchen table, or in a school, or in a university, or a workplace, how would your event be different from today? And I'd like you to tell the person, find out where they're from, they might even be near you, and find out what do they think of the ingredients of having a Raspberry Jam, and how would you make it work so we get the biggest impact. So can you talk while we get some chairs? Thank you.
everybody look in the front now. We've lost somebody. We don't know what we're not quite sure what he looks like. He's called, is it Eben or is it Eben? That's going to be one of the questions we're going to have. Oh, here he is. Yeah. And James keeps asking, where is Dave Walker? There he is. He's got his hand up. What's the problem?
I would like to make
an observation. So you're saying when you open that RISCOS door, there's a vast galaxy out there of really good stuff. Yes, yeah. And your name, please?
Gordon Taylor, I used to work for Computer Concepts.
Gordon Taylor? Yeah. Yeah. Don't recognize it. Gordon, you haven't seen Dave, have you?
Not far away.
Huh?
There he is. He's sat next to him.
Are you the Dave Walker who used to work for Acorn? No. Sorry.
Do we allow our VIPs to chat? Are we?
Sorry, we're talking among ourselves.
Yeah, don't worry. So we have a half hour or so planned for a panel discussion, and then after that, the idea of today is to have lots of people talking for a short amount of time, so they've got lots more things that they want to talk about, so you can go and talk to them and find out if they'd had 20 minutes, what would they have said? If you've got questions, well, I've got some that you sent to me that we're going to ask in a moment, but if you've got questions, keep sending them through Twitter and email, because these people would love to answer them. Just in case anybody here who doesn't know who the panel are, can I ask you just to introduce yourself very briefly so everybody knows who you are, if I pass from this end? Okay, thank you.
Is this on? I'm Pete Stevens of Mythic Beast Limited. My job is to keep the Raspberry Pi website up and running so all the trolls can post nasty comments.
Hi, I'm Alex Bradbury. I'm a PhD student here at the lab, and I've been doing various software development work on Raspberry Pi. So currently I'm working on the Debian Wheezy-based distribution images, which we're putting out. We're just about to make a new release, hopefully by the end of this weekend. We'll see.
Hi, I'm Gert van Loo. I'm more or less the hardware man behind the 2835 chip. I'm supposed to be responsible for everything inside there, so if it goes wrong, blame me.
Hi, my name is James Hughes. I'm a colleague with Eben and Gert at Broadcom, but probably more known as one of the moderators on the Raspberry Pi website.
I'm Eben. I'm one of the founders of Raspberry Pi.
I'm Liz. You might know me from the internet.
So, first question we have. Now, there's about eight people have asked the same question, so I'm going to try and combine them together. So, we've got, are there questions for a model C, D, E, F, and G? Hang on. When will the model A be released? Why didn't you use micro SD cards? Why does it not have this? Why is it... So, tell us sort of technical things fit together.
Okay. The reason it has the features it has, basically it's a breakout board for a BCM 2835 SoC, so we have the features that the SoC has. So that explains why we have composite, for example. You know, we were very lucky to find a chip that could do high def and standard def video. Why do we use standard SD cards? They're harder to lose in a classroom environment, and people tend to have them kicking around a little bit more than they do micro ones. When's the Model A coming out? Very soon. There was a video I think I accidentally gave the Inquirer a scoop a couple of weeks ago by waving a Model A around. Prototypes do exist. They are buildable at the price, and they'll be coming out in the next couple of months. The other one was future models. We have no current plans for future models.
Okay, now we've got a going to combine some questions from Martin Garthate in London, Jeff Hamer in Berkshire, and Tony Jeffries in Cambridge. So Martin says, what are the plans for a faster processor? Jeff says, how is the foundation intending to ensure that the Raspberry Pi keeps up with Moore's Law? And Tony Jeffries wants to know, what are your plans for Pi 2?
Can I answer this one again? Because it's a little bit delicate, right? There was once a computer company called Osborne Computers that pre-announced its next product a long time before it was ready and killed itself that way. We're very careful not to talk about future products. Obviously, we'd love to do something in the future, but you know, I'm not lying when I say that we don't have any current plans to do anything.
Andrew, do you want to get Alex to talk a bit about Raspbian as well, because what we're talking about faster processors, yes. It's nice to talk about faster distros.
Okay, yeah, well, I may as well interject to so we currently have. So we're working with people who read the website will have seen the work that Mike Thompson and other people have done on the Raspbian distribution, which is a pretty amazing community project to rebuild essentially, well, all of the tens of thousands of Debian packages optimized for the ARMv6 processor, which we use in Raspberry Pi with floating point enabled. So very shortly we're going to have a new release out which offers substantial performance advantages. And yes, it should be out in the next few days.
Obviously the other obvious route to getting a little bit more performance is overclocking. There is a little bit of overclocking headroom in the device at the moment. If you want more overclocking headroom, you have to overvolt it, which currently voids your warranty. We are looking to see whether we can provide a little bit more voltage headroom within warranty, but it's quite a substantial piece of work to make that happen.
Thank you. All right, we've got a question now from Bernard Skiller in De Bristow in West Berkshire and from Andrew Scheller in Cambridge. And they've asked lots of questions about the GERT board. Some of the questions have been, what is the GERT board? But they're asking specifically, when will it be available?
Okay.
What is it, first of all?
Okay. Yeah. The GERT board is an extension board for the Raspberry Pi. It's really targeted from the beginning for teaching. That doesn't mean it's prohibited from doing in any other fields. It's a generic I/O board which protects your Pi from doing stupid things on the outside. It has buffers, it has an A to D converter, a D to A converter, it's got a motor controller, open collector, and it's got an Atmel chip compatible with on the Arduino board. I sent a prototype of the board to Gordon, who's in the room here somewhere. And Gordon managed to get the GERT board and the Raspberry Pi working together with the Atmel development kit. That means you can run the Atmel development kit on the Raspberry Pi itself, and with a couple of wires, you can straightforward upload your programs and run them on the Arduino chip. When will it be available? We're working very hard on this. One of the things we try to avoid is to come out too soon, find out there's a huge demand for that, and then still have to disappoint about 90% of you there. So that's something which is at the same way as the Raspberry Pi organization underestimated the amount of interest in that. We have no idea what the interest is for the GERT board. Plans, I'm hanging myself out the window, 2 to 3 weeks we'll expect to have the board out. It will be a kit format, and we hope to have enough to satisfy a significant number of you. And the reason why it's not out yet, we don't want to disappoint you by having only limited numbers.
Okay. Now, this question's not on here because it's one of my questions, so I didn't send it to myself. But, as I understand it, when a lot of the concept for the Raspberry Pi came as a solution to a problem, which was identified that students were not coming to Cambridge the right sort of level or caliber or the right sort of volume, and lots of other people, and I'm sure people here would agree with me, that perhaps there's been some deficiencies in ICT education in the UK, and that the Raspberry Pi is one solution that will help solve that. However, thanks to the likes of, you know, maybe Mr. Kathleen Jones and the BBC and a few other people, the success and the popularity of the Raspberry Pi has spread globally. And I've seen there's people in India and China and all these kind of places. How do you feel about people in other less developed parts of the world where maybe labor is lower cost? Do you think that there's something you're willing to share, or what would you say about that?
Well, the developing world stuff is actually really, really exciting for us, because when we started this project, we were thinking in really, really small local terms. This was supposed to be a Cambridge thing. It was going to be getting people into the university. And as we went on, there were lots of other people in the UK saying, well, we think we have a need for this too. And then as it got bigger, we had a lot of people approaching us, especially from developing world charities, saying, you know, we could really, really use something like this. So, yeah, we're actually working with a bunch of universities and schools overseas. I've just been talking to some people in Indonesia this morning, actually, about getting Raspberry Pis for, initially, it's mostly local schools, but there are also people who are looking at the Raspberry Pi as more of a productivity machine, which is not something we expect people here to be using it for so much. But there are people who are setting up businesses. Again, I was talking to somebody last week in Africa, you know, allowing people in the village to come along and use a computer to browse the web, do web processing, do business work, where the Raspberry Pi actually fits really, really nicely. It's and we're looking at ways to get it driven off solar cells as well. And, there's a lot of work there still to do. We have a bunch of things that we want to do with it. But, stuff is ongoing.
Can I have the mic back?
Oh, I guess.
I kind of like holding the microphone, you can maybe tell. So maybe this might be for questions for other people in the panel. So we've had Rhys Gale in Cambridge and Tyria Allison in Oxford. They're both asking, one is, do you have any job opportunities, or how does somebody get a job working for the Raspberry Pi Foundation?
So we don't have any employees. We have one full-time volunteer, and we have a lot of part-time volunteers. We've got to where we are with no employees. I think probably over the next 6 months to a year, we are going to have to professionalize the foundation a little bit. When we do that... Like that's a bad thing. when we do that, there will be job opportunities. We will publicize them. So, we'll get there.
If Brazil ordered 100,000 units, if Brazil turned around to the government and said, we need to get 100,000 of these units, what would your response to that? We'll give you cash orders for 100,000.
I think it would take us about 25 days. That's our current build capacity is about 4,000 a day. The problem is that obviously a lot of those aren't available to go to Brazil because they're being sold to other people. But it's 4,000 a day. We're working to increase that capacity, which would be great.
Okay, we've got a question from William Gardner. You may have seen him. He was here earlier from Heber. And he asks, do you see that the Raspberry Pi might evolve into the core of commercial products in the future?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Yes, I can't see any reason why not. You've seen the boards that have been demonstrated, and Gert's board, both have the ability to interface it to the real world. So there's no legal reason why you can't just buy one, put it into a product, and then sell it. Obviously, you have to maintain the usual EU regulations, but as long as your product adheres to those, fill your boots.
Yeah, I think also because we're a charity, there are actually a load of people out there who think that we're not interested in seeing people develop business applications with the thing, which is about as far from the truth as you could get. We're actually really, really interested in seeing other people make lots and lots of money out of this. We think, you know, British entrepreneurship's really important, and we want to see you guys making things and selling them and, you know, sticking them in your display units and in shops and restaurants. We've had a bunch of people looking at doing those little ordery things that you have in restaurants for powered by Raspberry Pis. And I think they come in at about 400 quid cheaper if you use a Raspberry Pi rather than using off-the-shelf technology. So there's a lot of opportunity out there.
Would you say, as well, combining the answer to that question and the previous one, how do you work for a Raspberry Pi, that in many ways lots of people here are already actually working. Like when we have Liam, who's, as I understand it, perhaps being unpaid to do all these Raspberry Pi tutorials,
indeed,
he's actually, in effect, working for Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, so I think...
Oh, and the download server.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So we are... I mean, this is something that started off as a collaboration between the university here and Broadcom here in Cambridge, and it was a fantastic example of industry and academia working together. I think it's now become a three-way collaboration between those two and the community. And you know, in terms of where the work is being done, the vast majority of the work is now being done out in the world. It's not being done under our control, and that's a good thing.
Actually, the cases are a really, really good example of that, because when we launched, we thought, well, yeah, we're going to sell, what, 10,000 of these? It's going to be really expensive for us to injection mold cases. So tell you what, we'll wait until they're a bit more popular. That took 6 minutes. And then we'll look at doing injection molding. But we saw, you know, within a couple of days, people were already producing, first of all, 3D printed cases. Lots of people have now set up businesses making their own cases, and it means that there's this great big ecosystem now where you can buy a custom case, you can buy something that perhaps suits your taste a lot better than something that we might have chosen. So I'm not sure that you'll ever actually see an official Raspberry Pi Foundation case. We really like the fact that you guys are making them and selling them, and yeah, it's great.
Okay, I've got the microphone, so I can answer this one, I think, if I want to. But it says, is there any intention of, this is from John Holmes in Cambridge, have you got any intention for getting into schools to enthuse and energize students? I'll turn that to the panel first of all. Yeah.
Well, certainly we do have a bunch of interns working here at the Computer Lab over summer who are working on educational material. We had a small workshop where some people who are in the audience today came along and we discussed with teachers about how we could best work towards getting material out there. It's, you know, we've already heard lots of stuff today about various activities people are already working on. So there's lots and lots of things which are in the pipeline, just sort of trying to move towards building up that body of material where teachers can go online, interact with the community, also download pre-prepared lesson plans, materials, and then use those in the classroom. Currently, I suppose, there's work to be done in making it so that teachers who perhaps don't have lots and lots of time to plan out their lessons specifically for the Raspberry Pi can get involved.
Just to let you know, of course, the second half of today's event is exactly about that, and Graham will be presenting for the primary school, and I'll be presenting for the secondary. So if you are after lesson ideas, they will be available straight after this.
So we've got one more technical question, and then we've got two such a slightly humorous. So the next one is, are there more Raspberry Pis coming soon so that I can get hold of one? That's from Lucy Wade in Cambridge. Oh, she's waving. She's over there. Hello, Lucy.
Hang on. Come on, let me. I did the driving. I get to announce this. Well, I wasn't here for the Riskos thing I wanted to see. I have 200 Raspberry Pis with me. If anybody would like them,
Did you say 200?
I have 200 Raspberry Pis.
You have 200 Raspberry Pis with you.
I just stepped out during the... Yeah, absolutely. It's actually incredibly cool that I can carry 200 computers that are more powerful than any computer that existed before 1995 in one hand. So after this, I will be out there. We can sell them to anyone who wants them, 30 quid each, which is basically what you'd pay, including post and packing.
£30 each.
Which is what it's approximately what you pay, including post and packing, to buy them currently from RS or Farnell.
And all that money goes to the foundation.
Yes.
But we're not skimming anything.
Yeah.
and can we
put... We are skimming it off, but it's going to the foundation. Oh, no, that we are not skimming.
Is it possible we could put Lucy Wade at the front of the queue as...
Yeah. Run.
So, Lucy, you're not going to have to wait 20 weeks, okay? Okay, so Andrew Robinson... So Andrew Robinson, who was talking about PiFace earlier, he's brought some with him, and if you're interested in them, form an orderly queue. Not just yet, but we'll let you know. And there was a question, somebody saying, somebody from Virginia in the US, Ken Ermey. Is Ken here? Oh, because I would have just given him a PiFace for free, which is better than pie in the face. And, Ken wanted to know if there was going to be a prototyping interface to the Raspberry Pi for custom add-on boards. So, well, we've seen quite a lot about that today. Is there anything that's worth adding into that? We've got GERT boards, Pi faces, X10Is.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got something.
This might be a good opportunity to talk about the camera interface, since that's technically an add-on board. And from those of you. I was particularly interested by the zoo presentation earlier, which looked absolutely fantastic, especially from a student's point of view, which is obviously going to need some sort of add-on board for the camera. My day job does involve working on the camera interface, so I think I was in the first ever picture. I was in the first ever picture taken with a Raspberry Pi. So that's my. I think that will have to be my claim to fame. I can't imagine getting another one. We only have one prototype, which was designed by Gert, sitting on my left, and got working by a bunch of people at Broadcom in their spare time. So it's another good example of the community effort. We do need to decide which camera module to use. These things are taken out of, or not taken out of mobile phones, but are the same manufacturing as mobile phones. They're the same things you get in those things. And they can be quite expensive if you don't buy enough of them. Mobile phones are obviously built in colossal quantities, millions upon millions, and you get a hell of a quantity discount when you buy that many. So there's, I think Eben has been doing quite a bit of, I guess it would be negotiation. And as soon as we know that, we can start working on getting these things out to people, because I think they're going to be a very, very popular add-on board.
Negotiation's done. So it does look like we should be in a position to offer a camera board in the $20 to $25 range fairly shortly, maybe in the next 3 or 4 months.
I don't think I can beat that announcement. It'll be a 5-megapixel device. It'll probably need a little bit of tuning. I don't know whether any of you are familiar with the efforts required to make a camera phone module actually take pictures that where you can actually recognise people in it, but there's an awful lot of work goes into making them look good. The same camera interface is used on probably what's regarded as the best camera phone in the world at the moment. And that was developed by the team in Cambridge. So we've got a good pedigree in that area, but that did take a year to get working properly and to get the picture quality out. But obviously, it won't take a year on this one. Hopefully, we'll be able to use up some existing knowledge in that area. And we'll have to see how long it takes once we get the chips on board. But we need to design a new board to take this chip, and then get the software working and the tuning done. But then we should be getting lots of pictures of animals from Africa.
Okay, for our last question, I'm going to give you a choice of two questions to answer. You can either answer Chris Dawson from Cambridge, his question, which is, assuming that the universe is infinite, the speed of light is constant, and that time only travels in one direction, what did you have for breakfast this morning? Or you might answer this question, who is your hero? Who are your heroes? All of the panel, please.
You can make an individual choice.
That's an excellent question.
Either the breakfast or the hero, please.
The breakfast or the hero. I think the heroes is probably a whole bunch of the 80s game developers who spent lots and lots of time writing computer games in the 80s, particularly for the Spectrum, because I couldn't afford a BBC, whose code I disassembled and read. Largely so I could cheat.
For breakfast, I ate an apple.
Oh, this is very difficult. I'm not much into heroes at all. So I probably would have to hesitate between a lot of people controversial is Ford, which somehow I think would be seen as the father of making this terrible consumption society possible by making the products very cheap. And the other, of course, is the inventor of the light bulb, which I think is the president between those two. So, sorry.
And this is going to sound terrible. For breakfast, I think I had some of those little white mice, the little sweets. Yeah. Sorry? No, they wiggle too much. As a hero, I think I might be stepping on Eben's toes here because I think that Elon Musk of PayPal, got him, is... I hadn't realised that... I hadn't realised that Eben was a big follower of this space industry, but I think what Musk has done over the last, 10 years has shown up government-funded engineering to such a massive extent.
I mean, the guy's basically Tony Stark, but he's real, right? You know, I don't know if he flies around in a red and gold suit. I don't tend to eat breakfast. I tend to have an early lunch, and I had a ham and cheese sandwich.
And I had the other half of the ham and cheese sandwich. So, heroes for me, people who come up with stupid big ideas and then do them. So people like Jeff Bezos and Neil Stephenson, Clock of the Long Now, I mean, that's just stupid big. Tim Schmidt and the Eden Project. These people with huge, huge, huge visions who actually carry them through. We sort of did this by accident. We thought it was a little thing, and it kind of got away from us. But, yeah, those people who actually know what they're doing and then do it, I really admire them.
So... Can anybody in the audience name the creator of the Pong game 40 years ago? Can you name him? Oh, what's his name? Nolan Bushnell. Famous quote, and he says, lots of people have great ideas, but it's the ones who get out of the, you know, in the shower. You get out of the shower with this great idea, you dry yourself off, and then you make it happen. And we've got people here who very clearly got out of the shower and made these things happen.
And he went on to do Chuck E. Cheese Showtime pizza restaurant chain. So a great man.
Maybe not one of his best ideas. Okay. So and it's fantastic to be in a space. I said you're in the best place to be in the world today with the nicest kind of people here at the front, at the back, and even the gentleman with his hand up. He's a great guy. We'll find out what you want to say in just a moment. But I'm sure, Liz, you front a lot of the emails. You get lots of people sending emails all the time.
Some of them are horrid.
But I'm sure you must get people all the time saying, you know what you need to do? You need to go and take the Raspberry Pi and do this with it. And you need to go and do that with it. Do you have a response to that kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah. Do it yourself. Seriously.
Which is kind of where I was coming from with Raspberry Jam. I thought, it's a great idea if they did this, but I'm sure they've got far too many other things to be doing. So you go out and you do your Raspberry Jam and you make it happen in on your kitchen table, Starbucks. And we're going to listen to your question. Go on.
So, thank you.
To summarize, it sounds like you're saying less yak, more hack. Yeah. This is a vehicle for ideas. Thank you very much. Now, so Graham Hastings, if you could just make your way to the front, please. So today is just to start, we get to listen to some great people sharing some great ideas. And as James mentioned a few moments ago, we're going to move into a teach meet in approximately 15 minutes or time or so. Somebody's shaking their head at me. Soon, we're going to move into it. Soon, she's shaking her head at you, not at me. We're going to move into a teach meet in about 15 minutes. But those people who've just come because they want to meet Liz and Eben and Alex and all the other members of the team and all the speakers we've had today, Liam, Graham's going to give us some details of how in the next couple of hours you can go and spend some more time talking to them. Once you've bought your
Lucy, once you've got your Raspberry Pi, we're going to tell you who you need to go and speak to and where. So, Graham, if you could just give us some details about that now. Take a microphone.
We're building a community here, and... which one shall I use? We're building a community here, and you're the beginnings of a community.
Sorry.
Okay, both.
One's coming out.
Shall I start again? Okay. We're building a community here, and you're the beginnings of that community. Now, some of you will be in schools and education, and you'll want to stay for the Teach Meet, where we share our vision for the Raspberry Pi in education. Some of you will have much more techie things you want to talk about. And so to facilitate that, we suggested that you form groups. And if you look at your handout, there are four suggestions for groups. And possibly the best way to do this would be if you congregated at the tables in the street, in the area outside where you registered, and decided whether you would like to go to the pub of our recommendation, or if you are not interested in having an alcoholic beverage, you might want to go to McDonald's down the road. Whatever it is, you form your group and you take it where you want to go. They're good pubs, they're good recommendations, so do follow those. There's a map on the back of your handout which shows you where to go. So that's the breakout meetings. Future jams, I've volunteered to coordinate future jams in Cambridge. And the email address for Cambridge Jam Cam is on the back of your handout somewhere. So have a look at that. And do email me. I can then organise groups, or I can organise jams for you. I've got a venue that we are kitting out. We may not be able to provide Raspberry Pis for everybody, but if you bring your Raspberry Pis, there'll be monitors, keyboards, everything set up for you. So if you want to organise a jam yourself, let me know, and we can provide a venue for that. So contact me. The next thing I was going to mention was the Teach Me that follows. Did you want to say something about that now?
Yeah, I just want to be very clear. Hands up for those of you who are actually involved in education. Okay, so most of you probably be staying. In which case, as far as you guys are concerned, it's just a 15-minute break, then we're going to do Teach Meet East. I have one very special thing to give out right now, and Tom hates getting out in front of people, but Tom Hakes, could you come out, please? Please, could you meet Eben and Liz, because I have a very special award for you. And just to show you guys, I think to show everybody, this is what happens. That's right. He managed to get a Raspberry Pi before I did, and I had to steal mine. He was up there first thing in the morning. He is absolutely into his computer programming, and therefore I have made him the digital leader for Raspberry Pi in my school. And here is his reward.
Yes, if you're not staying for the Teach Meet, if you've got a handout, then you'll see that there's a paragraph there that says breakout meetings, and if you're into Linux or the RISC OS and you want to discuss that, if you look at the back of the handout, there's a map, and we've suggested that you would go to the Castle Inn. If you're interested in discussing robotics and control, then you may want to gather around table two out there and take yourselves to the Pickerel. If it's gaming that interests you, then the Punter is your pub, and you could meet at table three. And finally, if it's Python programming, then we've sent you to the Baron of Beef, and you can meet at table four. Okay. So that's it, really. While the photographs are going on, you've given your thanks to the presenters, but I'd very much like to thank, if you could thank, Alan and James for organising this event for you. They've
Okay.
And in the spirit of Raspberry Jams and Teach Meets, we didn't charge for tickets, and actually the university weren't going to let us anyway, but we're going to have a retiring collection for the Raspberry Pi Foundation, so rather than pay for tickets in advance, we would like you to pay for them afterwards. So if you've got any loose change, any notes, you can write a check, just put it in the collection pots on your way out. Okay, is that it, James? Anything else?
That's it.
That's it? Okay, thank you very much.